Welcome to a brand new episode of the All Hoops Podcast, your go-to home for all things basketball. I'm your host, Steve Inman, and as always, I'm joined by my producer to the stars and co-host, Chris Brito. The playoffs continue as the Brooklyn Nets look unstoppable out east. Meanwhile, the Suns and Jazz are off to quick 2-0 leads in the Western Conference. Before we get to all that, Chris, my friend, how are you?
Hey, Stevie. You know, I've been enjoying the playoffs so far. It sucks that we don't have our Knicks in there, but I think for the most part, all the series have been competitive. I've been hoping for the Bucks to provide a little bit more of a challenge to the Nets, but you know, they're only down one game and who knows how that series will turn out. But let's focus on that series for a minute more. Right now, do you see, like in the last episode, I talked about how I thought the Bucks were maybe the one team that could potentially beat them, but the Nets have frankly looked unstoppable, even in the game they lost yesterday, which was their worst, one of their worst offensive outings throughout the whole season, including the playoffs. They almost won that game. And the other game they lost in the playoffs, you needed Jason Tatum to score 50 points. So it's becoming increasingly clear that the Nets are going to be really hard to beat in the finals. When they make the finals. Do you think there's any team still out there that has a chance?
You know, Chris, I really don't. The only way I see a team having a chance is if KD or Kyrie gets hurt. I don't really see it right now. You know, the Nets look great. Even last night they were playing defense, which is not something I expected to say this year. We were talking about how this is going to be the first team ever to really win a championship without their defense. And yet now they're playing defense, so that kind of goes away. I just don't believe they have any weaknesses. I mean, eventually they may need James Harden back. You know, he's right now just wearing his, you know, track suits and drinking smoothies on the bench. But eventually they may need him back. I don't know if that's a certainty, though, that they need him back. You know, they're playing so well. It took literally them having, like, their worst offensive game of the year in Game 3 for the Bucks to sneak out a game-winning win. So I really don't see any team really as a big threat. I thought the Bucks would have been the biggest threat to the Nets, even though I thought the Nets were going to win this series in six games. But right now, I don't really see it. I think, you know, Giannis can be played in the playoffs. Unfortunately, he's just a downhill player who is always trying to go to the bucket. And you can target that in the playoffs. Teams are trying defensively. So it's going to take a Middleton-Holiday averaging, you know, 50 points a game, those two, for this to be a competitive series, and I really just don't see it.
Yeah, and I think the most frustrating part as we see this unfold has been that Giannis's struggles with the free throw line have been long documented with the playoffs since the playoffs have started this year. And you need a lot from Middleton and Holiday in order to compete with the offensive power, the offensive firepower that the Nets have. And, you know, the Bucks have long prided themselves in being a good defensive team, but you know, even though in a game last night you could see the value in that, you need offense to compete with this Nets team, and frankly the Bucks aren't getting enough from the supporting cast members on that squad.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree there. I mean, obviously DiVincenzo is a big part of that team. He is done for the postseason. Brook Lopez has not been as good as I kind of thought he could be in this series. You know, you need your center to just punish them inside because they don't play a center. You know, DeAndre Jordan doesn't play. You saw there was minutes where Bruce Brown was playing center, right, Chris? I mean, it really looks like that's the way to go at them inside. And if you don't have a Jokic, maybe even a DeAndre Ayton, you really can't do it. And so Brook Lopez needs to step up. Drew Holiday needs to step up. Middleton was good in Game 3, but was kind of a no-show earlier on. So what kind of Middleton do you get going forward? But at the end of the day, I think the Nets are going to win this in six games. And we'll see who they play, whether it's the Hawks or the Sixers. But, Chris, let's move on to the other conference, the West Coast. You know, you have the Jazz with a 2-0 lead over the Clippers. You have the Suns over a 2-0 lead over the Nuggets. Which team is more likely to move on to the next round?
So right before So I think the Suns will eventually advance. I think the Nuggets might take both home games. I just think that considering the elevation in Denver, that it's such an underrated factor, but I think that will could provide some issues. And I just think that, you know, Jokic is probably gonna have a big game. I'm sort of banking on the officials sort of swaying in the favor of the home team. So if Ayton gets those two early fouls, you know, I think the Nuggets will begin to roll. In any case, I think the Suns will eventually take that series. To me, they're the most balanced team left in the playoffs. And I know we talked about how the Nets are, they look unstoppable, but I think a team like the Suns, if they eventually advance to the finals and play against the Nets, I think they could provide a lot of issues that the Nets defense can contain. So, you know, you have a guy like Ayton, right? Like we're seeing him play well against Jokic. And frankly, the Nets don't have anybody who can guard him, but you know, we'll get to that point eventually. Right now, the Suns are playing so well. They move the ball great. Mikal Bridges has been such an asset to that team since he was traded there on draft night a few years ago. Wished he was a Knick, but, you know, can't have everything. In any case, I think the Suns win that matchup, but I think we're going to expect big games from Jokic and, you know, guys like Will Barton and Porter.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. I'm going to say the Suns series is more likely to be wrapped up quicker than Utah. I think the Clippers have another punch in them. You've seen in this playoff so far, they've been down every round in 2-0, right? So I think they could do it again. I think the Jazz are going to win the series being up 2-0, but I could see that series going seven games. You know, they adjusted pretty well on Donovan Mitchell in the second half of that game after they just absolutely cooked him, you know, in the first half, you know, playing him up to, you know, 35 feet, you know, towards the basket. You're going to have to do that. You got to play him like Luka Doncic. And it took them a while to figure that out in, you know, the first series against the Mavericks. It took them a while to figure that out against the Jazz, but we'll see if it's too late to make this a competitive series. Mitchell has just been unbelievable though, Chris. He had, you know, a stretch where he had 59 points in his last 40 minutes, you know, midway through the game yesterday. And I'm curious your thoughts. You know, they're up 2-0. Can he actually be the number one option, whether it's this year or future seasons, on a championship team?
So a few comments on Donovan Mitchell. I think we have to stop thinking of him as a secondary guy, as a guy who can't be that guy for your team. He's shown it in the playoffs for the second time in a row that he can be the man. And I think a lot of us who don't have Utah going to the finals, including myself, we've been sort of looking down on the accomplishments of this Utah Jazz team. And, you know, the team will go as far as Donovan Mitchell will go. And if he's scoring 35 points plus every night, I think they have as good a chance of anybody to really take these NBA playoffs by storm. Will I think they beat the Clippers? No.
Oh, you don't?
I don't.
Wow.
Shocker.
Well, I mean, they're up 2-0, so that is kind of a shocker.
They are up 2-0, but I think the Clippers have shown that in times of desperation, they can sort of come to the light, right? We saw them being down 2-0 against the Mavericks. We saw them being down 3-2 against the Mavericks, and they eventually tied the series and beat the Mavericks. So just like you mentioned, I think they should start treating Donovan Mitchell in a similar fashion to how they were treating Luka Doncic. You know, just really making it difficult for Donovan Mitchell to beat you. You know, more or less the Clippers need to make someone else beat them. Let Rudy have a 40-point game. Let whoever else. I mean, it looks like they'll get Mike Conley back soon. But there's no way that the Clippers should lose against this Jazz team, considering they're more talented.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. I do think the Jazz are going to win this series, and I do believe Donovan Mitchell can be the best player on a championship team. I really believe he's this era's Dwayne Wade. I really believe that if you look at their numbers, they're awfully similar. I think the difference is Dwayne Wade played in a bigger market in Miami and South Beach, and you know, Donovan Mitchell's playing in Utah on a team that perennially has always had very good teams and kind of did nothing in the playoffs. So I think people kind of overlook him a little bit. You know, they have very great numbers, and you've seen him take his game to another level in the playoffs, which is what the great guys do. And I think he's on that level. And again, he's only 24. I mean, is it possible for him to take another step forward? Is it possible for Rudy Gobert to take another step forward and they can get even better as the years go on? I don't think that's crazy to think. You know, Bogdanovich is a guy who is, you know, super underrated. Both Bogdanoviches, who, by the way, are not related to each other, are so underrated. They are both great players. Like, they really are. They're that glue guy, that third piece on a championship team. I really believe both those guys are on that level. So I think Mitchell can do it. I really do. And I think they are going to move on and play the Phoenix Suns. And that could be a toss-up series. And, you know, you're talking about a 24-year-old Donovan Mitchell who's already done a lot in his career, you know, as a guy who could potentially be in the finals this year.
And the other sad part about this is that he could have been a Knick.
Yes, they all – that's the problem with a lot of these. They all could have been Knicks, and it's very upsetting to hear that. Speaking of a guy who could become a Knick, Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns up 2-0. He had an incredible game. It was a game two where he had, you know, 15 points, 13 assists. I think those were – or 17 points, 15 assists.
Yes,
I
believe were the numbers.
Yeah. Zero turnovers. That's the big number right there. And they kind of beat up on the Denver Nuggets, and I just think they have more talent right now. There's no Jamal Murray, remember that, and – I really believe that, you know, you're not getting enough out of Aaron Gordon. So I think Chris Paul is going to the Western Conference Finals again. And I ask you, my friend, is this Chris Paul's best chance at a championship?
Without a doubt. I think in many respects, this has also been the best team he has been a part of. Yes, more talented than the Clippers, more talented than being with Harden.
Wow.
I think simply because of what I said before, they're just so balanced. And then you have... I think it works both ways, right? When you have young players on your team, you have the inexperience, but you also have the veracity of soaking in that moment of being there and just figuring out that, like, the team can really find ways to win every night with the different talented players they have. Like, the first game that they beat the Nuggets with, you know, it was such balanced scoring. I don't know any team in the NBA that can do that right now. I mean, the playoffs right now. So those pose unique challenges, I think, to the Nuggets, who, you know, have injuries on the team. And moving forward, I think the Suns and Chris Paul are just destined for greatness.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And, you know, you looked at last time, I would say that Rocket team at the time seemed better than this Suns team at the time. But at the same time, you weren't facing a juggernaut in the Warriors who, you know, were coming off of a championship and were trying to finish off a dynasty. So I really believe the window is wide open for Chris Paul to get to his first finals. And I think you and I both would like to see it. The idea of this Hall of Fame player, who we've known as a Hall of Fame player for about a decade now, not getting that ring, not getting to that finals. It's tough to see. It's tough to see it in real time. And I think we both would like to see him get that real opportunity. And we're both rooting for him because he's one of the all-time greats. And we love Chris and his brother Cliff.
The other aspect of this that's sort of underrated is that we sort of thought his career was going to go spiraling after.
Yeah.
He was traded to OKC. We thought that after he left the Rockets, his career was going to be over and there was no way to salvage what was left. But in what, the two-year span, right?
Yeah.
He turned around that OKC team and led them to the playoffs. And he was traded to the Suns, where now he's one of the second, you could argue he's the second or first best player on that, the second or best player on that team. So, you know, you got to feel good for Chris Paul. I mean, considering I didn't like him like 3 years ago, but it's hard to deny how great he has been for the game, how great he has been to watch, and just really like become a player who just instantly improves the other, his squad. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that OKC year really changed his career arc because, as you said, you know, he had been injured in what, like five straight seasons before that. And then all of a sudden he goes to OKC, they sit him down and he's like, I don't want to be here. Get me out of here. And they go over this plan about how he's going to be used. How are his minutes going to go? How are we going to treat his body? How are we going to make sure he can survive the season, get the most out of him as a trade asset from the OKC side, but then also prolong his career and maybe get him another chance on a contender a year from now. And that's exactly what happened. And now you see him in Phoenix with a legit chance at going to the finals. And it's really amazing to see. And I kind of think OKC, getting off tangent for a second, is going to try this again, right? I mean, you have Al Horford, this big contract. Would it be crazy to see him go to Boston for Kemba Walker? I think that's something that really could happen. We've heard the rumors about Kemba Walker being, you know, not happy being in Boston. You know, they did try to trade him to the Spurs last year, reportedly. You know, the Celtics would like to get under off from that contract. Still 2 years left of big money. I could see that being the next Chris Paul situation where they put him in OKC as a veteran on a team full of young guys. You want, that would be a fun backcourt with him and SGA. So I wonder if that could be the next plan, and maybe that'll revitalize his career. So I can't wait to see that. But speaking of tradable guards, Chris, it's the moment you've been waiting for. Your favorite player, Damian Lillard. The trade situation with him after being out in the first round is quote-unquote being monitored by a lot of teams, including the Knicks, the Celtics, plenty of other ones. You know, I'm sure the Denver Nuggets are involved in that. But should they trade him, Chris?
Okay, so really quickly, I would love nothing more than to have Dame on my team. That being said, if I'm the Blazers, I don't trade him. And there's a few reasons why. I think for someone who you obviously have so much respect for and someone who has been a great part of that franchise, I think you let him decide whether he wants to stay or not. And he's under contract, so there's really no rush to do anything. But as you know, time is of the essence when it comes to a player's prime. And I think right now the Blazers don't have the pieces to make that happen. And quite frankly, I don't know if they'll ever have enough to get Dame into a deeper run in the playoffs. So if the Blazers are listening to this podcast, don't trade him. But if you are, trade him to the Knicks.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And if I'm them, he is one of the top five to 10 best players in the sport. We all know, as Knicks fans, how hard it is to find one of those guys. I mean, our last one was, what, Patrick Ewing? You know, 35, 40 years ago. So I think you hold on to him for dear life unless he says it's time for me to go. And I think there's a way to maneuver this roster to make it more fit to Dame. And I think that starts with exploring the CJ McCollum trade market. Look, he was having his best start to a season. He looked like an all-star. He's averaging 30 a game, and then he got hurt. So I don't know what his trade value looks like right now, but if you could trade him for a quality wing, a all-star caliber wing, I'm trying to think, like, I mean, Jaylen Brown is asking for too much, and I think Brandon Ingram is asking for too little, but maybe something in between those two kind of guys, I think that's really what they need. When was the last time they had a legit small forward, power forward next to Lillard? You know, the list is bad. It's guys like Mo Harkless. It's Al-Farouq Aminu. It is Carmelo Anthony at the end of his career, which is now, Chris. So I mean, Evan Turner. So, like, I don't really know what they can do, but that would be the area they need to fix because those wings just don't cut it. Robert Covington did not do what I thought he was going to do this year. They gave up multiple first-round picks to get him. That didn't work. You know, he's not – a great on-ball defender. He's a very good help defender, and he just didn't make enough shots this year. He's not as good of an offensive threat as I think people hoped. So you got to find a wing, and I think if you do, you trade McCollum, and then you give part of his money to Norm Powell. That's still a very good backcourt with him and Lillard, and then you have your wing, and I think that's a team that is better equipped to compete in the West.
I fully agree with the sentiment of, you know, The other point I want to bring up, though, is that the Blazers are in a precarious situation that many other franchises have found themselves in, like the Rockets, like Indiana, where you have this superstar player, and it's been the conundrum for a lot of teams for the last several years in this like player empowerment era, where what do you do? And obviously, I think if you can get a guy like Dame on the Knicks, that'd be great. But it doesn't improve his chances of getting a championship. I think in some ways, you might be better off staying where you are.
I agree. About a guy who's going to cost RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, probably both Mavs picks, a couple of Knicks picks, then probably one of Mitchell Robinson and Quickly. So it's like you're talking about a team of one of Robinson and Quickly, Randall. Maybe they bring Derrick Rose back and a couple of patchwork free agents with Lillard. So to me, that's not a better team than you have right now.
No, not at all.
I don't really know there's a trade out there where the Blazers can make where Lillard goes to a contender, because they're going to ask for so much back because he's so good.
Yes, no doubt. And I think the most likely option, these are the two scenarios I see playing out. They're not going to trade Dame. They're not going to trade Dame, but then I do see them potentially trading for CJ. I just don't know who you can get out there. Maybe Tobias Harris.
To me, that's not enough.
Right. I'm with you. I don't think it's enough either, but I'm just thinking of like potential options out there that can improve this team. Sabonis maybe. I don't know. I think
if you can get Sabonis, that's the guy. I think that makes a lot of sense. But if I'm Indiana, Chris, like I'm not doing that.
No. I mean, Sabonis, you could argue, is like the second or third most skilled big in the NBA.
And he's younger and cheaper. So I would hold on to him as long as I can. But we'll have to wait and see on that, Chris. You know, McCollum could be on the block. Lillard could be on the block. The NBA offseason often brings crazy things that we've never seen before. So I can't wait for that. And I really, really am excited to see that. It's kind of like the best time of the year for the NBA, which is sad to say. But it's also happy to say, because there's going to be so much to talk about. And I can't wait to do that. We're going to go to final thoughts right now, right after this. Okay, Chris, final thoughts time here. Coach of the year, Tom Thibodeau.
I am so happy that he won it. I don't think there's been a coach. I mean, we talked about it a few weeks ago on the pod, right, to get ready for the playoff preview. There hasn't been a coach in the NBA that has done more with less than Tom Thibodeau. He took a team that was, what, 22, 23 wins and took it into a 40-plus win team, yeah. Top defensive rating team in the NBA. You know, a lot of it has to also do with Randall, but, you know, under Tom Thibodeau's direction, that team has improved drastically with, you know, you already know how talented our team is. Not very talented.
Right. And you saw it that, you know, he made Nerlens Noel a legit player, like a player that was missed, right? You know, Julius Randle became a guy who got all NBA votes. And yeah. Those guys deserve credit themselves, but when all these things go right, I mean, Derrick Rose went from kind of toiling away his career in Detroit to a legit sixth man of the year candidate who actually wound up starting games. So with all those things going well, you got to think Thibodeau had something to do with it, right? So he deserves a ton of credit, and it's really something I did not see coming. I was very against the hire, as you can bring up, I understand. And I just believe that this is a home run, and I'm really excited to see what the future of this team holds.
Yeah. I think my favorite part about this whole thing was that, you know, Tom Thibodeau and Julius Randle have both ushered in a new era, what feels like a new era with the Knicks that is reminiscent of the 90s team that was so popular with fans. And, I mean, you could see it in the first few playoff games, even though we lost the series. You know, just get that energy back. And, you know, you can tell people are proud of this team. Like, I'm proud of this team. Like, you can argue that we're one of the least talented teams in the NBA, yet we always manage to grit out wins in the regular season. And I think that's something to be proud of. And I think that's all a testament to what Tibbs has done.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point right there. And, you know, this is a team that actually won 14 more games than the Toronto Raptors. And I would make the case the Raptors had more talent this year than the Knicks. But you know, speaking of those Raptors, Pascal Siakam is going to undergo shoulder surgery for a torn labrum, unfortunately. He's going to be out 5 months. And because the NBA is going back to their original October to June schedule, he's probably going to miss the start of the season. Is that a concern to you at all for the Toronto Raptors?
I'm thinking my answer is as like really a twofold, right? Like, I think Siakam received a lot of criticism this year for not playing up to par, not leading, not acting like a top player on the team that could be worthy of a playoff contention. And as we saw, you know, the Raptors really got smoked near the end. They didn't make it to the playoffs or the play-in. So this is sort of validation for Siakam. He was apparently dealing with this injury. And I think that should restore confidence with the Raptors fans and the team that, well, maybe more, mostly fans, that once the regular season starts and he's back, that team will regain form. That team will be a perennial playoff team like they've been in recent years. So I think it's a good thing. And obviously I'm happy, good for him for taking care of himself.
Yeah, no, I think that is a good point right there. And last thing we teased is on last week's show to end, Cade Cunningham, the prize of the 2021 NBA draft. The lottery is only 11 days away right now, Chris. I can't wait for it. It's next two Tuesdays from now. And who is the team that needs Cade Cunningham the most of these lottery teams? For me, it's Orlando, Chris. They just literally gutted this entire roster. There's really nothing here that is valuable in any way. So to have a team that is more or less starting over, it would be really fun to see a big building block like this and to show teams that, hey, tearing it down is okay instead of trying to be an 8 seed every year. And I think they're a good example of that. And I think they deserve to be rewarded, believe it or not. And I think, you know, it's a place that really hasn't had a lot of excitement since the Dwight Howard days. So I think that's also something. And you look at these other teams, like, do I want him in Houston trying to battle with John Wall for point guard minutes? Not really. Do I want him in OKC? Same situation with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Not really. You got Cleveland, who gets the first overall pick every other year. You know, do I want him battling with Garland and Sexton for point guard minutes? No. Yeah, Minnesota, same thing with D'Angelo Russell. You know, they've also had the number one pick, what, 3 times in the last decade? No. We mentioned Toronto. That would be interesting, but they have a bunch of point guards. Sacramento has a point guard. New Orleans has point guard. Charlotte just got LaMelo Ball. So it's literally like this is the spot for Cade Cunningham where I believe he could have the quickest impact.
Well, I sort of look at this as, granted, you're completely right about Orlando needing a talented player who could distribute the ball. There's no question about it. But I think him going to a team like OKC, where, you know, Shai Gilgeous could play off the ball a little bit, or he could be the off the ball guy, I think it'd be a really fun young team. I think we can see that team competing for something big sooner rather than later. I mean, Presti wouldn't like to see that, but I think they have something good there, and they have Dort, and they have a bunch of nice little pieces that if you get a player less talented as him, like, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's true. And remember, the Oklahoma City Thunder themselves have the 4th best odd to the number one pick. And then they also own the Houston Rockets draft pick if it's not in the top 4. And they finish with the worst record, Houston, so they have a 52% chance of keeping that pick and getting a franchise player. They have a 48% chance of giving that pick to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So literally there's a scenario where the Thunder come out of this with a Jonathan Kuminga and a Cade Cunningham. And then we're going to say, oh, wow, look at them. With those two, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Dort, a ton of cap space and all the draft picks ever seen. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. Again, that's 2 weeks from now, you know, 11 days. And Chris, is there anything you want to say before we wrap up the show?
No, I'm just really excited about how these playoffs are going to turn out. Like, you know, we just talked about the Suns, you know, becoming a force to be reckoned with, and the Nets looking unstoppable. And I hate to say it.
Yeah, no, it sucks, and it sucks more because we both kind of were like, we should bet on them to win this whole thing, and the odds kept dipping and dipping as the season went on, and we said, no, we're not going to do it, and we should have done it because they're going to win this whole thing, and that is going to do it for us here on the All Hoops Podcast. Chris, thank you so much. As always, great time, and we'll be back next week to wrap up the second round of the playoffs. Who will be in the final four? We'll find out next week.
Bye, everyone.